I call this meeting of the House Ways and Means Committee to order, and we are formally waiting on quorum, but I think we should start the bill presentation being, and then we can make the motions as we need to get the bill in front of us and do what we need to conduct the business. But I think for the sake of keeping on time, we'll actually just get started with the bill presentation. So, Representative Bierman, today on our agenda, we have House File 402, which is your bill that was heard in HHS last week and is now here. So I will make the motions once we reach quorum, but if you could please present your bill, and I know we have an amendment, so we'll actually hold on moving the amendment till we have quorum, but if you could present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. I understood I should be relatively brief in the whole bill presentation, so I'm just going to give a brief overview on the very top of it. House File 402 encompasses three main issues. Number one, the return and maintenance of charitable assets in certain circumstances. Number two, how we can address the growing impact of mergers and acquisitions of healthcare entities on public interest and public health. And number three, the issue of the health maintenance organization conversions from nonprofit to for-profit. So just a couple comments on these three items, the maintenance and return of charitable assets. Charitable assets are associated with nonprofit health systems, and we have historic investments in the University of Minnesota medical facilities by Minnesota taxpayers. So that's the first one. The second one is the issue of mergers and acquisitions, and there has been a great deal of consolidation in the healthcare field across the country, and it is accelerating. Many states are taking steps to address it because it is one of the many cost drivers of healthcare. We need to cultivate a healthy ecosystem for healthcare. We talk a lot about network adequacy, but less about how to realize it. We need a positive policy process that's data-driven to achieve healthcare objectives in our state. This includes workforce training, healthcare objectives set as state goals based on public health needs. This will give us a roadmap, but we also must know the current landscape. We obtain this by knowing what is coming. A notice and review process will help. This is the Better Health, Longer Lives strategy. And the strategy begins with looking at preventative care and having a reformation focused on primary care. The third item are the HMOs. HMOs, as most of you are aware, are built on beneficial public investments, including lucrative tax breaks and broad public contracts. Since 1973, all HMOs in Minnesota were nonprofit organizations. That changed in 2017. Now, for-profit HMOs can sell health plans and bid on our public programs. And starting July 1st, when the moratorium ends, nonprofit HMOs will be able to convert to for-profit. Legally, a nonprofit holds charitable assets for the benefit of the public. This bill extends the moratorium and directs MDH to provide recommendations to the legislature next year on updated guidelines and regulations that will safeguard these public assets. When proper laws are not in place, many states have seen these assets disappear into the pockets of investors and executives. In Minnesota, we need to protect these public assets and utilize them to promote better health. That is the intent of them. We have billions of dollars on the line. 402 will address this issue. So, Madam Chair, that's the brief overview. I do want to let the members know that we do have the privilege of the Dean of the Medical School here today, Dr. Jacob Tolar, and we also have Assistant AG Aaron Conti if there are deeper questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Would you also describe your A2 amendment too, please?
The A2 is, this is the
appropriation. Could you speak to that part?
Yes, okay. So the fiscal note, we do have a fiscal note, and this will fund the Minnesota Department of Health and some to the AG as well for the costs of doing the study and the FTEs that would be needed.
Great. Thank you, Representative Bierman. And we'll go to member discussion. Representative Liebling.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just going to really comment on the amendment, just add what I think, add information, I think. If my understanding is, so this bill, a form of it is being carried in the health omnibus bill, and so is the cost. So I think that what we're doing here with the amendment is bringing, because the bill is moving separately, we're bringing that onto this bill, but the cost is actually just being carried in the health omnibus bill. So just for clarification. And then since I have the floor, let me also just say that I am so appreciative of Representative Bierman working on this bill. This has been worked on a lot. It's been to my committee, three times, because we've wanted to make sure that every time it's been updated, that it's had a committee hearing. And I just really want to commend him for all the work that he's done. And this is a super important bill, and appreciate it being heard today in committee.
Thank you, Representative Liebling. And I will just hold on for a second, Ginny. So we do have quorum, so I'll note for the record that a quorum is present. So let's do our motions here, and then we can continue member discussion. So if you would like to be on the list, we can get you on the list. So I'm going to move that House File 402 be placed on the General Register. And then I will also move the A2 amendment, which we just heard discussed. All in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A2 amendment is adopted. So we formally have the bill in front of us and we have adopted the A2 amendment discussion. Representative Cleburne.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Bierman, I just want to say thank you for bringing this forward too. I have been incredibly frustrated by the lack of information that I have been able to receive about the merger and about our healthcare system as a whole from Fairview. And I have repeatedly asked for information from them in committee and by written letter. And they've been great about giving non-answers. So I think this has been this legislation is really important for us to get at the root of what does our healthcare system look like and how can we best serve Minnesotans. So thank you again, and I encourage everyone to vote for this bill.
Further discussion to the bill. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I see that the fiscal note in front of us was completed on 5-2. And the last time it was in front of any other committee besides this one was the Health Committee sometime. I guess I'm not sure exactly when. Maybe Chair Liebling could tell us when, but it was definitely before 5-2. I'm wondering if nonpartisan fiscal staff could explain the differences from when it was in the last committee, which would be the Health Committee, to this fiscal note here, because obviously this is the 4E, excuse me. So I'm sure it's had many iterations of fiscal notes, and I didn't go back to look to see how many of those were, but if they could just explain the most recent to this one.
Sure. Ms. Adrians. Okay. Actually, we have Joe Harney is here, and he will speak to that. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Harney. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Olson, members of the committee, Joe Harney, House Fiscal. I believe the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee reconsidered House File 402 last Monday and adopted a DE amendment, and that's when the fiscal note was requested, with a due date of yesterday, I believe, for Ways and Means.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm to understand that it went through multiple committees. I see it went through Health Finance Committee three times, and there wasn't a fiscal note until the final bill hearing. Madam Chair.
Mr. Harney.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, the fiscal note was not before the committee when the DE was heard last week.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So are we the only committee to actually review a fiscal note for this? It seems like a rather large impact, not necessarily in the numbers, but in just the, you know, there's so much in a fiscal note that it refers to. So we're the only committee, Madam Chair, then, to review the fiscal note, and it hasn't gone through any of the other committees with the fiscal note?
Representative O'Neill, that is correct. And as mentioned, it, you know, has had very substantive hearings and on the policy, because it is largely policy. We have time to dive into the fiscal, and I think Representative Bierman talked a little bit about it, but what also, as Representative Liebling talked about too, this fiscal part is carried within the omnibus bill, which did get also heard and passed through committee as well. So, but we're, you know, we're here, and we can certainly talk more about the fiscal note. That's why it's in front of us. So if you have questions, I think this would be appropriate to ask them now. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. Can we just get a high level overview, since it's the only place that this fiscal note will be discussed, as to what are the, you know, you've got FTEs in here. Maybe you could just walk us through the fiscal note of the high level things that are important.
Mr. Harney, would that be appropriate for you? Question for you.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, members of the committee, the costs in the fiscal note that are carried in the A2 amendment is funding provided pursuant to the fiscal note at the Department of Health. On page 5 of the fiscal note, there's an expenditure and revenue formula table that highlights the FTE calculations for the work described in the bill description and assumptions section. Outlined here at the department is the need for research scientists, state program administrators, another research scientist, a staff attorney, and another state program manager. Turning to the next page, there is cost, more FTE cost outlined, and then further contract and operating costs for an economist, public input facilitation, report and regulatory recommendations development, and for an actuary. The total cost and expenditures outlined in the bill pursuant to the fiscal note is $1,583,000 in fiscal years 24 and 25, and then that amount is $709,000 ongoing in the tails.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so would you characterize this, just for the public that's also listening, would you characterize the higher cost in fiscal years 24 and 25 as standing it up and more IT, or is it other things? Because it sounds like an actuary and some other kind of research-based folks will be continuing to be on the team as this. I don't believe that this bill is specific for just the merger with Sanford, but it looks like it's standing up an ongoing part of an agency so they can analyze those things going forward. Would you?
Mr. Harney.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Neill, yeah, that's a fair characterization. I would note the increase in costs that are not ongoing in the upcoming biennium are due to the study and the contract cost at the department for the actuary and the economist.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's some additional costs, Madam Chair, also to the Attorney General's office. Do we have someone here that could speak to that?
We can speak to that, and I think Representative Cleavorn in the state government finance bill carries some of the costs in there too as well. And so I think I see a head nod. We could, that I think is, and Mr. Harney has some more comments too.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Cleavorn can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the state government finance bill is carrying $2.5 million one time generally to the Attorney General for antitrust work.
Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the line in the bill says for antitrust and charitable asset oversight. So, thank you.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, so one-time costs, but my inkling on this is not going to be a one-time. I mean, to me, it looks like ongoing FTEs are going to be needed for that. So if it's just one-time costs, how are we going to carry this forward?
I think we'll... Representative Cleavorn probably has an answer on that. Representative Cleavorn.
Thank you. Also, in the state government finance bill, which we passed off the floor, there are additional FTEs that are in the charitable asset oversight piece as well. And that is ongoing expenditures. These are pieces that have been previously funded in the state government cut, as I mentioned on the floor, by other legislators before my time here, and we are restoring this so that we have proper oversight. One of the things that I have looked at as a legislator is the state of our charitable assets that are owned in the health space. And what I'm seeing in looking at those 990s is that there are transfers of property, and I just want to make sure that those transfers of assets are actually being done with the public in mind, and making sure that our clinics and our hospitals actually are there for the long term to serve our communities, whether they're in Greater Minnesota or in the metro area. And this is a really important piece of legislation because I think the public would be shocked. I looked at the 990 for Fairview to see where the properties are located, who owns them, how much money that we think is going to nonprofit healthcare is actually being paid in rents. And those rents include paying the property taxes for private equity firms. It is something that I think the public really needs to know, not just what is the cost of this bill, but what is the cost to the average Minnesotan and their health care if we don't pass this legislation. So it is both the cost of this legislation, but the cost that ordinary Minnesotans are paying in their health care bills to be paying real estate taxes for private equity firms.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just so I can fully understand this increased cost, are we giving the Attorney General additional authority to do anything to in relation to what Chair Cleavorn has just described? Is there going to be any, I mean, oversight's one thing, but actual taking some sort of legal action, are we changing anything of any action that can be taken by the Attorney General?
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I think we are providing, first and foremost, the employees and the FTEs to deal with the charitable asset issues. There's nothing written in the bill that it was going to expand what that is other than putting in the guideline of public interest as one of the major pieces of this legislation. So charitable assets per se or anti-competitiveness or antitrust, as I understand it, that would still be the same as it has been in recent years. But I think then when we go to the MDH proposal for next year to discuss the guidelines and regulations around charitable and nonprofit systems, we will have that full conversation with members and with the legislature. And I might want to just ask if the Assistant Attorney General wants to come down and comment on that answer, if just to be certain of where they stand on that.
Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Erin Conti. I'm an Assistant Attorney General. So our piece of this fiscal note is primarily around the transaction review portion of this bill, and then, if necessary, the enforcement action piece of this bill. So that's where those FTEs come in. We also anticipate, depending on kind of this complexity and the scale of these transactions as they're coming through, that we may be needing an outside expert work on some of these.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm to understand that the enforcement action is where I'm zoning in on. So this doesn't expand your ability to enforce anything different than you do now, but you're adding staff to be able to accomplish what's currently in the law?
Ms. Conti.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. So not precisely, but close. So right now, the Minnesota Attorney General's Office reviews a portion of transactions for nonprofit and antitrust violations. This law, as proposed, would give us some additional authority to see a wider swath of transactions in the healthcare space, because we don't uniformly get to review healthcare transactions of a certain scale right now. It is just kind of in those discrete silos. This adds for us a piece of reviewing whether transactions are in the public interest, and gives us enforcement tools around that. So there is some increase in the stream of transactions that will come to our office, and we are also gaining a cause of action to bring.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. I know I don't want to delve into the policy. I'm trying not to, but I'm trying to understand the FTEs. And when they said these FTEs are to increase enforcement action, then I think that's a reasonable line of questioning to go down. And so the answer is yes, this is expanding the authority of the AG's office to use enforcement action to step in. And I'm assuming you didn't say this, but I'm assuming to stop a merger or to redirect a merger. I'm not quite sure. Like, these are multi-billion dollar mergers, and so you don't have the authority now, and does this now give you the authority? So I believe this came out of the whole merger with the concern with Fairview and Sanford and the interest of the University of Minnesota. We've talked about this extensively in the higher ed committee. So just, can you just explain to the committee and the public what the AG will now be able to do with this legislative change, not only be able to fund additional staff to do enforcement action, but specifically what can they do now?
Ms. Conti.
Madam Chair and Representative, there are a couple questions embedded in there. Please flag me if I've missed components of it. So in kind of the public zeitgeist, this is a Fairview-Sanford bill. That is not what this bill is. This is a transaction review bill that has been, that reflects decades of consolidation and kind of haphazard efforts to look at it. So for more than a decade, we've seen a lot of consolidation, and the AG's office has reviewed transactions, consolidations to see, are these running afoul of antitrust laws? Where we're dealing with nonprofit healthcare entities, have there been any sort of abuses, any breaches of fiduciary duties, those sorts of things. So again, we are reviewing some of those transactions. This bill is making clear that all transactions of a certain scale do need to be, we need to receive notice, and we need to receive notice in advance. In the past, there's been some ambiguity around that, and it leads to false starts for everyone. So again, we already receive or can ad hoc request lots of information from parties that are engaging in transactions. This creates a presumption that we will receive that stream of information. Mm-hmm. Similarly, we can already go to court to pursue some sort of enforcement action responding to healthcare transactions where we see a breach of nonprofit duties, where we see violations of antitrust law. So those are kind of the existing thing. This is a little tuning up of the dial, but just an additional piece where we can go if the transaction is not in the public interest as guided by a variety of factors. Mm-hmm. So we already have a review of many transactions. We already have a variety of causes of actions that can bring us into the work that we can take into court to pause a transaction or to ask for equitable remedies. This is giving kind of an additional piece. And I think the FTEs reflect that we expect, again, if this is a stream of information that's coming to us, as opposed to us kind of ad hoc requesting information of entities, that we will need some staff to review that information. So primarily, this is about reviewing those transactions, just as we do already in the nonprofit space. So we already receive a steady stream of nonprofit notifications, but we are adding some healthcare transactions to that and increasing staff accordingly.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Now I've got it. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That was much more clear. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Further discussion? Representative Cleaver.
Thank you. And just to Representative O'Neill, I just want, I want you to know that even before I knew about the Fairview merger, potential merger, this was a question that I had reached out to the Attorney General's office about, because I am seeing that there are assets that I'm very concerned about that are moving from nonprofit organizations into private sector hands. And I want to make sure that we are protecting our healthcare systems. And this is a broad picture for me. And so I just wanted you to know, long before Fairview came into the picture, the merger, I was asking these questions. So I just wanted you to know that. And I think it's something that you and I could probably get our heads together on. So thank you.
Great. Further discussion to the bill? Lead Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, I'm assuming that the reason why, even though the fiscal note is new, that the reason why this updated fiscal note is already carried in previous past bills is that previous versions of this fiscal note had a rough estimate of the cost. That's how they were carried. Is that correct?
Representative Bierman, do you happen to know?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, there had been, you know, numbers that were bandied about, but, you know, I didn't have a firm fiscal note on, and things changed as well. You know, earlier rendition, this was a $10 million oversight. It switched to a $40 million, so we knew that was going to affect that. But we, you know, we put in a placeholder in health of a couple million, and we knew there was some state government funds, so it's really not too far off from where I kind of expected it to end up.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Bierman, just obviously this is why I don't serve in the Health Committee, is this exact conversation. I just want to, is there any hope for a negotiated agreement here between the stakeholders? Obviously, we're dealing with a public asset that should involve some level of public oversight and approval. On the other hand, we have most of the assets involved in this acquisition being privately held. So to frame this as a black or white issue, it really is much more complicated than that. Can you just update us? Are stakeholders any closer to reaching an agreement on this? Or are we going to be going down the path of this is just going to require government sign-off?
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, I think that's the question of the hour. I mean, I'm not privy. I'm not sitting in on any of these meetings, so I really can't comment on what's going on, whether things are progressing. I've heard people saying that they're in talks and they're being productive. So, you know, we do have to wait and see. If I knew something, I would like to be more optimistic about that.
Sure.
Thanks.
Well, Madam Chair, members, I have friends on this issue who are concerned about the heavy hand of government reaching into these this merger and requiring approval. I have other friends who are very concerned about public assets being turned over to the private sector. So today I intend on voting with my friends. Thank you.
Representative Liebling, do you have something quick?
Yeah, okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say that we need to sort of distinguish here. This is about the university and about the Sanford-Fairview proposed merger, but it's also broader, as has been mentioned. And so when we say, you know, is there peace in the valley or whatever we want to say, it kind of depends on who we're talking about here. So I think as I understood Representative Bierman's comment, I think he was more talking about the specific merger issue, which, but in terms of the broader issue here, I think Representative Garofalo, your comment is very spot on. I think a lot of entities that have talked to me and so on don't mind this as long as it isn't about them. So I think there is broad support for this idea, because I think a lot of people do realize that we need more oversight of what's happening in healthcare, because after all, healthcare should be about health, and it should be about the patients, and it should be about the public interest. And everybody, I think many people recognize that. And of course, there's always struggle over the details. And I just want to give another pitch here for Representative Bierman. He's worked with and listened to many, many, many entities and so-called stakeholders. I know Representative Dowd says we shouldn't use that word, I guess, but, you know, but he's talked to lots and lots of people and has really attempted to balance interests. But, of course, with a bill like this, everybody is not going to be happy at the end, because at the end of the day, entities don't want to be regulated. We all know that. Nobody wants anybody looking into their what they consider to be their business, but it's really the public business. And so I think while people could quibble about the, for example, Representative Bierman mentioned $10 million or $40 million, he's talking about the level at which the bill kicks in, because we don't want to be, you know, applying the same standards to tiny little entities as to big ones. So there's been some movement on that and some discussion on that, and he's been very, to my eyes, very open and flexible, trying to work with all the parties. And I'm sure we'll continue to do so until this crosses the finish line. So I just wanted to kind of give that context to it. Everybody is not going to be happy, no. But neither is it going to be, or has it been, just, you know, here's what we're doing and let's take it. That's not the way he is proceeding.
I think we're going to go to Representative Bierman to close out his bill at this point. So, Representative Bierman, final word on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for all the comments that have been made. This is a pretty complex issue, and I think the more input we have from stakeholders at every level is important. Crossing the finish line might be a new beginning, because we just have a lot of work to do every single year on health and human services and creating a health system that will deliver to our people better health and longer lives, and that's our objective. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bierman, and thank you, members, for a great discussion on the bill. So with that, I renew my motion that House File 402, as amended, be placed on the General Register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 402, as amended, has been placed on the General Register. Thank you, Representative Bierman. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1900, Representative Hollins. And as you make your way to the testifier table, I will move that House File 1900 be re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. Well, welcome. So I am going to, once you get settled there, I'm going to have you, I know you have your an amendment, but what we're going to do first is just have you go walk through your bill, and then I think that will help the amendment make more sense. So
okay.
If you could proceed with your bill, Representative Hollins.
Thank you so much, Chair Olson, and thank you, committee members. This is a bill to reauthorize the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, otherwise known as the ENRFTF. I'm going to mess that up. I'm sorry. Just full transparency. This is a trust fund that was created for the public purpose of protection, conservation, preservation, and enhancement of the state's air, water, land, fish, wildlife, and other natural resources. It was established in 1988 with overwhelming support of the voters and was rededicated after a decade, again, with overwhelming support of the voters. And now it is time, once again, to ensure that this important source of funding is going to continue by putting the questions before the voters on the 2024 ballot. Over the last three decades, it's helped to fund dozens of important projects to protect the land, water, and air of Minnesota, and I am very excited and honored to be carrying it. There were a couple of things that we were attempting to do this year. The original lottery dedication was 50% of the lottery proceeds would go to this trust fund. It was subsequently lowered to 40% from that 50% because we needed more money in the general fund. And in addition to that, so we were trying to increase it back up to the 50%, and also we were going to try to include the unclaimed prizes from the lottery and bring those into the trust fund. However, that gets at my amendment, which is where Ways and Means would come in. But my amendment is to, in fact, take that those parts out and make this, in fact, fiscally neutral and keep it at the 40% where it has been and keep unclaimed prizes out for now.
Thank you, Representative Hollins. And with that, let's go to the A2 amendment to get this, and then we can discuss a little bit further because we also have an oral amendment. We need, excuse me, the A6 amendment. So I will move the A6 amendment. And will you just say, you kind of said it already, but would you just describe what the amendment is doing to the bill?
Yes. So the amendment has a couple of technical provisions that we brought into the community grants program aspect of the bill, but most importantly, it is removing provisions on unclaimed lottery prizes and provisions on increasing the lottery proceeds from 40 to 50%.
Great. Thank you, Representative Hollins. And we caught a something that needs to be fixed to be consistent with the change on line 1.2 to the change that Representative Hollins referenced. So I'm going to turn to Mr. Sullivan to walk through the oral amendment to the A6 amendment.
Madam Chair and members, as you mentioned, the A6 amendment on line 2 reinstates the current 40% of the state-operated lottery proceeds that go to the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund. But there's an additional corresponding change that needs to be made to House File 1900, the first engrossment, and that's on page 2 to delete most of the new language. On lines 11 and 12, the language that would be submitted to the voters. So the commands to do that are to modify the A6 amendment or amend the A6 amendment as follows. Page 1, after line 2, insert, quote, page 2, delete line 11. Page 2, line 12, delete 250%, comma.
Great. Could you, Mr. Sullivan, would you mind restating that one more time just so people can track along?
Madam Chair, that it's to the A6 amendment, page 1, after line 2, insert, quote, page 2, delete line 11, page 2, line 12, delete 250%, end quote.
So that is my motion as an amendment to the A6 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the change to the A6 amendment has been adopted. So discussion to the A6 amendment as amended. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hollins, is there already an existing community grant fund, community grant program? Under these accounts?
No, that is a new program. Sorry. Apologies. Thank you, Madam Chair. Lee Garofalo, no, that is a new program that we are creating. It doesn't take any additional funds. It is just using the funds that are already dedicated to the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair and Representative Hollins, why was this not done in committee? Why is this being done here? That's that section of the amendment.
Representative Hollins.
That section of the amendment was done in environment.
Representative Garofalo.
Then why is it in the A6 amendment?
Representative Garofalo, will you restate your question again?
Sure. So we're on the A6 amendment as amended.
Correct.
I'm looking at we're deleting existing subdivision 1, and this is okay. So this is restating existing language in the bill. Gotcha.
Yes.
With changes. I'm sorry. I just figured it out. Thanks.
Further questions, Representative Garofalo?
I have questions, not on the A6.
Okay. Amendment. All right. Any further discussion to the A6? Representative O'Neill.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay. So since you are changing a little bit of the question posed to voters, I suppose that's also in the underlying. I'll just ask it here since I already started down this path. So kind of to Lee Garofalo's question about adding in community grants, which is in the underlying bill. There is no reference to that in the question posed to voters. And since you are doing an amendment to that section, is that something that you've discussed or is that language, I mean, is there a reason why we didn't put that in that language on to the ballot saying that this is money now going to community grants as well?
Representative Holland.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Neill. So my understanding is that because the question that's really coming before the public is, do you want these lottery proceeds to be dedicated to this Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund. Mm-hmm. And the community grants is a subset of that, but it still has the LCCMR deciding the majority, the vast majority of the money that goes into the Environment Natural Resources Trust Fund will be decided by that particular group. It is a small subsection of the funding that would be going to the community grants, and it's still for the exact same purpose. So the purpose, the underlying purpose in the Constitution of what the funds are dedicated to, it still has to match that purpose.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, okay, but you're still making a significant change to how the money is used and appropriated, to whom it's appropriated to. And I just would think that if we're going to, you know, put this before the voters, they should fully understand that. And maybe can't say all that on a ballot question, I don't know, but it seems like an important change. It's a pretty significant change, even though it's maybe not today a lot of money. Things change throughout the years. I think this goes till 2050, so that's a long time. So that's why the question. The other question I have is you're making some significant changes to monies that can be used or now not used for wastewater treatment and some even with drinking water. And you've kept the language in this to specifically talk about improving water quality. So quality water of lakes, rivers, streams, which, and even to protect drinking water is still in here, but it seems that making those changes would kind of put us backwards, because if we're not supporting to that level that we used to for wastewater treatment facilities and drinking water, that would, I'm concerned that you have this language still in here and you're making pretty significant changes in the bill. So did those conversations happen in other committees as well, since you've got that also in this amendment? Is specifically you have protect drinking water and you've got protecting the quality of lakes, rivers, and streams.
Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Yes, that conversation happened in Environment Committee. We did discuss the fact that we specifically have removed the ability for the wastewater treatment plants because it was being used as the amount of money that goes into this fund and that can be taken out and spent can be used up incredibly quickly with wastewater treatment plants because they're so expensive. And it really ended up being not, we believe, not an appropriate use of the funding. But we do understand that when we look at some of the things that are funded through the Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, protecting drinking water absolutely does exist there, because some of the things that we look at as, you know, research on how fertilizers are used and things like that that impact the groundwater. And so I do think it's still appropriate to have protecting drinking water in there, even when it's not being used for wastewater treatment plants.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, at least the conversation would happen. I don't agree with the policy change, but I mean, if you're going to protect it, you know, I know this is in the Environment Committee, but if you're going to protect lakes, streams, rivers, and drinking water, one of the best ways to do it is to make sure that the effluents from a wastewater treatment plant is as clean as it possibly can be and not contributing to that. So in helping especially small cities and even larger cities manage their wastewater is a huge impact. So I mean, at least you discussed it, so I appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further discussion to the A6 as amended. Representative Cleburne.
I just want to make sure that I understand. Wastewater treatment facilities are capital bonding projects as well. Is that correct?
Well, we're going a little.
No, I'm just making sure that I verify that there is a revenue stream to pay for that. Is that correct?
I know there are other ways that we talk about funding wastewater treatment within the context of our work here. So to the A6 amendment as amended, any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the A6 amendment as amended has been adopted. To the bill as amended. Discussion. Seeing no more discussion. Representative Hollins, final word on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today and to strip out all the money from my bill. hopefully this will be the least painful thing you have to do today. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hollins, for staying within our budget parameters. So with that, I renew my motion that House File 1900, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say no.
No.
The motion prevails, and House File 1900, as amended, has been re-referred to the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration. Thank you, Representative Hollins. So the last bill on the calendar for today is House File 2988. Representative Wolgamon will make his way to the testifiers table, but I'm going to go back on the agenda, and Vice Chair Edelson, can I get a motion to approve the minutes from Monday, April 24th, 2023?
So moved.
Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. And now on to House File 2988. So I will move that House File 2988 be placed on the General Register. So welcome to the committee, Representative Wolgamont. Please present your bill.
Well, thank you very much, Chair Olson and members of the House Ways and Means Committee. I am very excited to be here this morning to present House File 2988, which is a bill that adopts the recommendations made by the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council. Madam Chair, this bill relates to workers' compensation self-insurance, workers' compensation housekeeping and system efficiency proposals, permanent partial disability schedule updates, hospital outpatient fee schedule payments, and here's the real reason why this bill is before you in the Ways and Means Committee, Madam Chair, a department-led study of work-related post-traumatic stress disorder. So, members, with that, I would bring your attention to Article 5, the Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder Study. This requires the Commissioner of the Department of Labor and Industry, who is here with us this morning, to conduct a study identifying systemic or regulatory changes that may improve the experience and outcomes of employees with work-related post-traumatic stress disorder. This includes a $500,000 appropriation for the Commissioner to contract with a third party to complete part or all of the study and hire additional staff to support. That is what the bill does, Madam Chair and members, and Article 5 is the appropriation that has us here in front of the Ways and Means Committee. The Commissioner is here this morning to answer any further questions that you may have, and I'm also happy to answer any further questions that you may have.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamont, and just note that this bill doesn't, you stated the cost, but it's not to the general fund, and so.
Yes, thank you. It's from the Workers' Compensation Fund.
Thank you, Representative Wolgamont. Discussion to the bill. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really quickly, I realize this is a compromise and it's coming straight from the Work Comp Advisory Council and they do good work, which is great. I'm just wondering about the study. I would think there might be something out there already about that there should have been plenty of studies out there already. Is there a reason why we're doing this study in this bill, for $500,000.
Representative, I see the commissioner coming out. So, welcome to the table, Commissioner Blissenbach. If you want to introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This was a long discussion by the council, and the recommendations did pass unanimously from labor and business, PTSD has been, I think, a topic of discussion, and work-related PTSD specifically a topic of the council for many, many years, ever since PTSD was added as a recognized covered injury and illness under the work comp statute. And unfortunately, there isn't a comprehensive study about what other states are doing, what other countries may be doing, other jurisdictions, and there isn't a clear path on how to ensure that people who are suffering from work-related PTSD are receiving the care early on and appropriately to lessen the symptoms and have the ultimate impact, which we are always hoping the work comp system does, of getting people back to work. So that's the reason why we're undertaking this study and why the council propose that this happen here in Minnesota.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hopefully, Representative Wolgamont will be working with Representative Herr as she has been waiting through all of this. So, okay, I didn't realize that there weren't any other studies in any other states. It's kind of astonishing to me that there hasn't been anything out there already in the public realm. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative O'Neill. Further discussion to the bill? Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, members, I would encourage members to support the bill. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Wolgamont, final word on your bill.
Well, thank you again, Chair Olson and members, for the opportunity to present House File 2988. And I would just like to thank all the members of the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council in the business community and the labor community. This is just really good work and really good collaboration, and I'm very proud of the final product that's being put forward and would ask for your support for this legislation.
Great. Thank you, Representative Wolgamont. And with that, I renew my motion that House File 2988 be placed on the general register. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, please say no. The motion prevails, and House File 2988 has been placed on the general register. And with that, we have finished our business
Madam
for today.
Chair?
Oh, Representative Pinto.
I sent an email about this, but since we're going pretty quickly, I just thought I'd mention that right at the moment, there are some students in the rotunda at the Capitol from a middle school in St. Paul. And if folks have the chance before 11:30 to stop by, the students would love to see you. They have displays about some policy projects that they put together using their math skills, and they'd love to see you in the rotunda until 11:30. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have a follow-up. I had an offline conversation with Ms. Adrians, and the spreadsheet that I had asked for is in process. I'm wondering if that is, in fact, done now that I think we've had all of our budget impact bills coming through. So do we have a final total of taxes and fees being increased in the next 4 years?
I can have Ms. Adrians, and they will post it on their website, and we don't intend to have further discussion here, but it will be publicly available. Ms. Adrians.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, we're putting the final touches on it, and I should be able to have it dispersed to members today.
Any further, Representative O'Neill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just to be clear, it's going to be emailed to all of the members of this committee or all the members of the body of the legislature. I don't mean the Senate, but here in the House. And then which website will it be posted on, Madam Chair?
So we can have, I'll talk to Ms. Adrians, but it'll be on the fiscal, the House fiscal. Is where it'll be posted. And we can discuss. I don't know about the email, the distribution. I'll talk to Ms. Adrians after. Mm-hmm. So, Representative O'Neill.
So this committee or the general fiscal? Sorry.
Ms. Adrians.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill, I'm happy to send it to all members.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when you say it'll be on the fiscal site, do you mean our committee site here or the
Representative O'Neill, I'm going to turn it over to Ms. Adrians. This isn't typically something we post within the Ways and Means, so this is something you as a member asked because you also have access to staff. And so, Representative, I'll turn it over to Ms. Adrians, but perhaps this is also a conversation you could have offline. Ms. Adrians.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative O'Neill. We have a House fiscal analysis web page that's part of the House of Representatives website. And so we post a lot of good things. I'll put a little plug out there. All of the spreadsheets, it's filled with lots of good information. And so we tend to post information that we think is relevant and interesting to members and the public there. So when I distribute it and share it, I can also share the link where you would be able to find it as well in that email.
Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was sorry it took so long to get to that answer. I just want to be clear for myself and the public because I've had multiple requests now for that information. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. All right, and with that, we are adjourned.